risk management across the supplier base is the probably single biggest issue to have front of mind in this kind of strained environment. The suppliers, of course, are facing significant challenges, as well as your own business. And you need to be conducting constant reviews again to judge the financial health of those suppliers. And you need to be very, very careful that you don't harm your key suppliers.
Welcome to the Hackett Group's Business Acceleration Podcast. Week after week, you'll hear from top experts on how to avoid obstacles, manage detours, and celebrate milestones on the journey to world-class performance.
Hello, my name is Martijn Geerling, practice leader for advisory services in Europe. I'm your host for today's session, and my guest is David Ketchin, practice leader for the Hackett Group in Europe. In today's session, we will talk about the COVID-19 crisis and the impact on business services. In particular, COVID-19 didn't start as a financial crisis, but it may well be morphing into one. Recently, headlines have been dominated by news of pandemic spread being curbed by vaccinations, but also of news about the world economy restarting and causing supply chain disruptions and raising concerns about rising inflation rates as well as rising interest rates. So this may be the end of a long period of low cost of finance for companies, and in the process may expose highly leveraged companies. So we'll be looking into that discussion today, and we'll discuss the potential threat of tighter funding available to firms and also how they should respond. I'll be guiding the discussion and provide context as needed, but we'll turn it to David. And perhaps, David, perhaps I can start by asking, what are the signs that we may be heading for a credit crunch? And importantly, are there differences in the way it will affect different business sectors?
Yeah, it's really interesting looking at the market at the moment, and there are a number of signs and signals out there. One thing I just wanted to say up front, though, and it's a bit related to you asking about different sectors, is that the impact this time in this credit crunch, if it comes, is going to vary differently according to the sector trends, the impact of inflation, the availability of cheap debt, and indeed whether there is a need in that individual company to refinance over the next 12 to 18 months anyway. Whereas the previous credit crunch in 2008 really went across all companies equally, this time it's going to be very different according to those factors that I just went through. So if we look at the different sectors and how that's been affected, COVID obviously impacted hospitality and travel, high street retail, oil and gas. They've all had a really big hit during COVID, whereas online retail and high tech have either not been affected or, in fact, they've done really well during this. So it's very different impact according to the sector. In terms of inflation, you've seen quite a bit of increases on the high street. And it was interesting that last month, there was the biggest increase in the last 10 years in prices, 5% year on year. And that, of course, is going on into labor rate negotiations. We're seeing wage increases across the board coming on the back of that. And then there are other inputs as well. So freight costs, for those of you that work in that kind of industry, you'll be fully aware that we've had a few ups and downs recently, but it's still at the moment 8 to 9 times more expensive than it was pre-pandemic. So there is real inflation taking place there at the moment. The government committees around the world are considering how they can try and control that. But undoubtedly, there's observed inflation already. Then in terms of the availability of cheap debt, there was a lot of government funding made available in the UK. I know it wasn't done in every country around the world, but there was a lot made available as an example in the UK. And they called those bounce back loans for some businesses, where it was low interest rates to help them get through their funding issues. But there are also some of the major corporates received funding as well. There was notably £1 billion made available in the UK for some major overseas companies such as BASF, Chanel, Bayer, and that was done to protect UK jobs. Now, while the early signs at the moment of repayments on the bounce back loans look good, it is still going to be a big question as to whether, if there was demand in the marketplace, how much will be made available if there's a second need for it. And also, if an individual company requires more funding in addition to the bounce back loans, the opportunity to secure that debt cheaply is very much reduced compared to where we were before. So, as I said, in terms of the signs that we might be leading for that credit crunch, it's different by sector. But the fact that some sectors have been heavily impacted, that inflation is coming and the availability of cheap debt is a problem, then you can see there is potentially a problem for organizations here.
Yeah, like you say, this time is different from the previous financial crisis in 2008. The drivers that are creating the credit crunch now are not the same. And as you say, there are differences between some businesses who were already heavily impacted by the COVID pandemic in general, and some have been literally thriving, the ones that are in the e-commerce business. So that gives maybe perhaps the macro perspective and, of course, some speculation about how this is going to play out in the upcoming months. If we turn it to executives, particularly in finance, in companies themselves, how should they respond and how should they plan to address this issue?
Yeah, there are a couple of things there. I think the first thing to consider is the funding requirements that you have for your organization. You need to think not just about what's required to survive, but also what's required to thrive. In other words, to fund growth when it comes. That's when you could find yourself in a real problem. If the market comes back and you're not able to take advantage of it because you can't fund certain investments, then you're going to really struggle to take advantage and to thrive after the pandemic. So just giving a few specific examples around that, you might choose to run a marketing initiative. A marketing initiative usually requires discounts, might require delayed payments to really drive that. And really importantly, if it's in the right kind of industry, then you might need to build inventory quite significantly so that when the initiative is run, you can satisfy it. You know, there are lots of cases from history where organizations have run an amazingly discounted offer, but then they failed to build the inventory, which meant they couldn't satisfy it and the whole initiative fell apart. So you need to be really careful about thinking about what additional headroom you need to support the business. And the other thing is, don't be tempted to become too optimistic. I spoke to a number of organizations a couple of months ago, and they were saying, you know, by the end of the year, we expect the revenue to be back to pre-pandemic levels. Some organizations have achieved that, but not all of them will. And it's really important you consider what will happen if you do not get back to that volume of business. And that's about forecasting, it's about planning, and it's about running scenarios to make sure you've really thought through what level of funding is really needed.
Mm-hmm. This sounds difficult because you're saying we should both plan for growth as well as protect the revenue of the business. And one thing that has played out over the past almost 18 months now is that it's very difficult to predict the outcome of this crisis and when it's going to end. And that perhaps turns into a discussion of be prepared for both a scenario of return to growth as well as perhaps the pandemic is going to last longer. And you already mentioned scenario planning. Are there other things that companies can do as practical next steps to improve effectively agility at the enterprise level to be prepared for both scenarios and anything in between?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are a range of scenarios that need to be considered. But just on the agility side of things, we've seen some really interesting strategies adopted by companies in the past. And BMW is quite a well-documented case study, which is worth recapping at this point. And what they did was look at what would happen to the business if there was a downturn, how much would they need to absorb in order to keep the business running forward, and particularly, how could they absorb the downturn without any layoffs? And they went through a number of scenarios and actions that they could take, such as factory closure or temporary factory closure, I should say, flex time, enforced timing of vacations, reduction of temporary labor, and so on. And you might say, well, those are all fairly standard responses that you could make to a downturn. But the difference was that they pre-negotiated it with the works councils. And that meant that they could take action within days or weeks instead of months or even quarters, because they were going to have an extended negotiation period. So there was a real partnership built with the works councils explaining what the purpose of the scenario planning was, but it gave them significant agility in what they could do. They also looked at facilities as well. It's sometimes an area that's overlooked. I think most recently, because of the change in work patterns, it's something that's come right to the top of the agenda for people. But looking around how you can get flexibility on your real estate requirements has become really important. So I think those are the ones, this ideas like that, I think, that's not just thinking through what might happen, but thinking it through right to the what would it take to execute against this strategy so that you genuinely do get the agility.
Mm-hmm. So it's really be prepared for anything and have the plans ready to execute, because that creates the agility. If you're prepared for any future and then can move on and execute, that creates true agility.
Absolutely.
So if you look at the credit side of the business, there are really two parts of it. So you can think about improving working capital, improving cash, the key business cycles around order to cash and purchase to pay. If we zoom in on those and perhaps starting with the revenue cycle of the business, what are the actions that companies should consider there?
Yeah, it's interesting having a think about this. And what I would say is that for the past 10 years or so, a lot of our clients, certainly they've looked at the revenue cycle, they've looked at global business services, they've looked across the piece, they've sometimes wanted to improve their working capital. But we haven't seen many projects that have been really focused on a transformation of order to cash per se. But in the last year or so, last 2 years, there's been a massive demand for that. And I don't think that was only caused by COVID, but it's also that people have recognized that because money has been cheap, they've paid very little attention to the revenue cycle and the quality of the revenue cycle. And what we're seeing now is a lot of demand in that area. And I think the areas that organizations need to focus on, the first thing is customer profitability analysis. So really understanding end to end, have you made the correct cost allocations for some of the costs related to distribution? That's often done incorrectly. Discounts, commissions, all of those different allocations, so that you really understand which of your customers are giving you quality returns. And then having a look at how you revisit the terms and the pricing related to that. And that's very important when it comes to the cash flow, of course. So, you know, good payers, you may give them a further discount, but poor payers, they need to pay a premium and you need to watch them very, very carefully, which kind of links on to my next point, which is the quality of the customer, meaning ability to pay. We all do that very, very carefully before we make the first sale with an organization. But in the current climate, it's critically important that is being monitored on a very regular basis, almost week to week, month to month. And you need that early warning system that, so you don't end up with a disproportionate amount of debts with an at-risk customer. So very important that you have that quality going through. The next point I was going to make, and this is where a lot of our transformation work focuses at the moment, and that's around accurate billing. One of the biggest blocks to collecting cash from customers is if you send a bill that they don't recognize or that has a problem in it. And you know, it's the easiest thing in the world for them to say, oh, I can't pay it because it's not right. And they wait until the last minute before telling you that. And then there's a scrabble around to try and make it happen. Accurate billing is the foundation of getting the cash in. So really important that you pay attention to that. And then getting really, really tactical, the other piece in the current environment is getting on top of the segmentation of the customer base as well. So again, according to the size of the customer and paying behavior, and taking a very specific approach for your debt collection process and the activities of the team to make sure you really get the debts in as you would wish them to. So there are quite a few different aspects to cover in that regard.
Yeah, so you cover everything, starting with the sales and marketing side, from pricing and analytics, all the way through to cash collection, billing, etc. And a lot of these things are best practices that companies should apply, and just coming to focus again now because of this credit issue. If you look at the other side of the equation, so I mentioned earlier on what is really headline grabbing is empty shelves and ships being stuck in ports and not being able to offload, which leads to supply chain issues. If you look at it more broadly, so the source to pay side, what are the challenges there and what kind of actions can companies take to address that part of the equation?
Yeah, and again, it's interesting that you raise the point. You know, risk management across the supplier base is the probably single biggest issue to have front of mind in this kind of strained environment. The suppliers, of course, are facing significant challenges as well as your own business. And you need to be conducting constant reviews again to judge the financial health of those suppliers. And many of them have survived, but they're still recovering. And you need to be very, very careful that you don't harm your key suppliers. And in fact, you might need to reverse some of the trends that we've had in place for the last 10, 15 years. So the idea of consolidation of supply in order to give those suppliers greater volume, build a longer term relationship with those suppliers, in order to achieve the right procurement outcome. That's what we've all been pursuing for many, many years. But of course, that does with it come great, it does bring greater risk with it. So you might think about reversing that in certain situations. And instead of consolidation, you may need to have more than one partner to make sure you've got assured supply. And the challenge there is you don't want to be doing that at the last minute. If you're renegotiating a new supply contract with a new supplier, then of course they've got the advantage from a negotiation point of view commercially. But the other thing is you don't want to be in a situation where you're shortcutting any of the really important sustainability points. So you need to have done your audits around sustainability, modern slavery, all of the other regulations that have become so important to procurement functions. And indeed, that's one of the things that I would say is that, you know, the core mission for a procurement function will always be on time to quality at the best price. But the sustainability agenda is critically important. And that's come up very, very prominently on the agenda in a number of countries. We're seeing at the moment some chief executives in Germany have an environmental target baked within their contract. And of course, if it's in the chief exec's contract, it's only going to cascade one way. So it's going to come down through everybody's contract. So it's a real challenge for procurement functions at the moment. There are a lot of different issues to cover here. But as you said, the assurance of supply is really, really important. But you need to make sure that you continue to do it in a responsible way. And the final thing that I'd say around that side of things and the process enablement is around technology acceleration as well. Generally, there is an opportunity for organizations to drive greater efficiency of the enterprise. In other words, everybody being able to execute their piece of purchase to pay more quickly and more easily. The technology enablement behind that is really, really important. And while we would always say that the agenda should start with the best use of ERP, the majority of your automation agenda will be satisfied by your ERP. But then after that, look for the best of breed solutions, then smart automation, and then MDM, master data management, and the analytics comes off the back of it. And in procurement space, particularly for spend analysis that you mentioned and spend analytics that you mentioned earlier on. So there are a number of different themes to cover off in that area as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, David, for providing that insight and also to broaden discussion beyond where I started off with my line of questioning around credit crunch and the financial part, but equally the importance of customer retention, how you can reward them in the customer to cash cycle, as well as spend reduction, but also the impact of risk management and new targets that are being set towards companies around sustainability. So again, I'd like to thank you for sharing your insight today. And one takeaway as well that I have from this discussion is that one thing we know around the current pandemic is that it's almost impossible to forecast what comes next, but important to take away that we have to hope for the best, but consider to plan for the worst. And that if we do that from a business perspective, if we have the right scenarios worked through, we will be able to respond in an agile way to whatever this crisis throws at us next. So thank you, David. It was great to have you today and join me in the conversation.
That's great. Very interesting times.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. You can find the audio, helpful resources, and a transcript of each episode at podcasts.thehackitgroup.com. If you liked this episode, please share it. You can also subscribe at Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app so you never miss an episode. We'd welcome your feedback by tapping the rating on this or any episode, or send us an email at podcast@thehackitgroup.com. The Hackett Group is a global leader in defining and enabling world-class performance. Learn how we can assist with your improvement journey at www.thehackettgroup.com.